I'm going to talk a little bit quickly. I'm going to leave these slides behind. They're under Creative Commons Attribution License. You can do what you want as long as you give me credit. And so if you see something fly by on the screen, don't worry, it's there for you. And I'm here as a resource for you to sort of talk about copyright issues that you may have questions about. So if I say something that, you know, I'm fine with being interrupted. Okay, so I think we're aware that the information environment that we're operating in is changing, and with respect to access to research, imagine that you come along and read a sentence like this, and a researcher sees this and then is stimulated to do further research. In the internet era, reading this sentence should not just be done by a set of human eyes, it can also be done by a machine that first has to identify these sort of concepts and entities. And right now, if you do a Google search, you'll get results that look like that. But what you're really looking for is information about these genes in databases. So what you really want is that. And we're in the early days, I would argue, of developing the technologies that allow us to go from text to data in this kind of structured way and automated way. And part of my sort of advocacy around open access is that I think this is what speeds the progress of science, and you need an open access environment to get us to this. In addition, the researcher has a set of other requirements to follow up on this research, and how do you get access to that? And ideally, what you want is a linked environment in which I can click through and order a cell line from an article, sort of Amazon style. We're not there yet, but I think the future that we're aiming for, at least the sort of concept of the future, looks moves into this automated way. So we're moving away from the old forms of sort of knowledge transfer into a quicker, more sort of robust information sharing. And if we think about what the paper's job is, I think the paper is not just going to report on the data, it's going to publish the data, and we're going to need to link the data. Materials and methods, you can imagine that at some point that's just going to be metadata. That is, to the extent that the materials and methods are sufficiently standardized, we ought to be able to just have a metadata field that points to that. And we have to stop thinking of the paper as this sort of old codified object and think of it as a living linked object. It's a networked object that points out to the inputs. What was the provenance of this research? How was it influenced? And pointing to sort of next steps. And if you want to follow up on this, here's where you get the cell lines. Here's where you order these other materials. And we want the relationships between these different entities to be marked with links so that we can analyze the links and do a sort of Google-style page rank to figure out the significance of these kinds of linkages. And ultimately, we've got to keep those links in an environment where they don't rot. Link rot is a serious problem for the open web and in a published universe where we need the record to stay as the record in some form, even if we layer on later versions. Maintaining the linkages with a distributed record becomes increasingly challenging. So that's sort of the kind of future, and now I'm going to switch to the sort of the role of copyright in a world that looks like that. So when we think about copyright, the reason copyright is non-intuitive to a lot of people is it has its own perspective on the world. So what I want to try to do is, if you put your copyright glasses on and looked at the world, here's how the world would look. So we divide IP rights into sort of three dimensions. The subject matter, that is what counts as qualifying for the IP, and then the scope, what do you get when you get the IP, and how long does the IP last? So the nouns then are what counts as a copyrighted work. And the difficulty is that we've moved from an old form of regulation of books. So copyright was born in a world of very practical trade regulation of publishers of books. And what you had was rights to sell the book, and everybody knew what that was. Over time, we've moved away from the concrete to the intangible. So now what copyright attaches itself to is any original work of authorship. So that original work can be embodied in multiple different kinds of forms, but the rights are attached to the work, and wherever the work goes, the rights follow, right? And you have to understand that there might be a published object or published entity that has a copyright layer and a public domain layer, because the work of authorship is the expression of an individual, but the underlying facts and the underlying ideas that are being expressed are in the public. So I can copy another, I can copy facts and ideas from another article and you don't have a copyright issue. It's only if I start taking the expression that copyright comes into play. And so in cases of data, figures, tables, where a lot of what the information is factual information, there's no copyright attached to those facts, but there might be to the selection and organization around that. And so you have to, this is what makes it difficult then. If you're analyzing a question of, you know, researcher wants to republish this table in this reformatted way, do I need a copyright permission? Well, the question is, are you copying the expression that was in that table or figure? Or are you just copying the data? If it's just the data, you don't have a copyright issue. If, however, the formatting, the selection, and arrangement are also being imported, then you at least have to ask the question, is this a fair use or fair dealing, or is this something that requires a license? But it is definitely the case that you can rework figures, tables, graphs in a way that does not touch on copyright, because you're only grabbing the public domain layer out of that, right? And this is just a way to sort of visualize, you know, what I just said. So whenever you think about copying from something, now you've been taught, you think about the layers of it. Are you copying the public domain layer or the copyright layer, right? So this might be a version of where those layers fit. So that's what copyright attaches to. Anything that counts as an original work of authorship, which is the words in an article, the visualization of data, other kinds of, anything that involves some kind of editorial choice about how to express it. Once you do that, you get automatic copyright. What's the guy in the shower doing? Copyright's automatic. The federal law showers down upon the author as soon as they create these exclusive rights. And this happens all around the world. If you're writing something in the United States, you get about 200 copyrights, because copyright is national, but it's been coordinated through international treaties. And so effectively around the world, this is the package of rights that the author gets as soon as they create whatever that original work is. And so I think with respect to your conversations about plagiarism, the overlap with copyright is that the act of copying is an act that copyright cares about. If what is being copied is the copyright layer, now recognize, of course, that plagiarism might be concerned about copying facts and ideas without citation, right? That might be okay for copyright purposes and not okay in terms of publishing ethics. And so sometimes they overlap and sometimes they don't. It depends on what's being copied. Now, I was asked to talk a little bit about, in this world of, you know, mobile devices and linked content, actually the answer on that one's pretty easy. Linking is not a copyright issue. In the US, this is very clear. In the EU, there's this funny little twist. There was a recent decision by the High Court in the European Union. Turns out that if you are linking to something that's already on the web, you're not exercising any copyright rights. If, however, your link is the only way to get at something that's not otherwise public, then you are actually exercising copyrighted rights. So if somebody had something hidden on a web server that was not indexed and not otherwise publicly available, that link could be a problem. But that would be the only case. Otherwise, linking out is not an issue. The user makes a temporary copy of whatever they visit, and that might be on the user, but you, the linking party, don't have to worry about that. So that, to the extent that that was a question that needed answering, that one's got a pretty clear answer. In addition, even when those verbs are implicated, when you're making copies, when you're distributing copies, what the law does, if you think about set theory, we define the set of activities with broad verbs, so everything is initially inside copyright's tent, and then we use exceptions and limitations to pull certain activities out of copyright's tent and say, this is okay, you don't need a license for that. Now, we've harmonized on those rights, but we've not harmonized internationally on the exceptions. So although there are some broad agreements about certain activities, in fact, national law differs. So we hear about fair use. Fair use is what you look to inside the United States when you're doing something that copyright regulates. In the Commonwealth countries, it's called fair dealing, and the scope of fair dealing is not quite as broad, except in Canada. And then outside in the European Union, you get a list of activities that are permitted. So making copies for the purpose of private study is considered, in most of those countries, to be a non-infringing use, or certain research activities. So that's with the copyright glasses, you're asking, is the activity even covered by copyright? If it is, does it fit within the sort of normal rule, or does it fit within the exceptions and limitations? And only if it does not fit within the exceptions or limitations, that's when you get to the question of licensing. Otherwise, all of those steps are done sort of first. So if we think about things like text and data mining, there's a lot of, here it's important to understand that you can layer on an agreement on top of an activity that is permitted by copyright law, and then that contract regulates that activity. And that's a little bit what's going on in text and data mining, because as a copyright matter in the United States, I can text mine anything I can find on the web, as long as what I mean is making a temporary copy, extracting facts and ideas, and then keeping a reference copy for myself of all that data, right? So I'm not republishing anybody's journal articles, but if I do a bulk download of all of Science Direct, and I mine it, and all I extract is facts and data, and I keep my copy of Science Direct for the purposes of being a reference copy, that's a fair use. I don't need a license to do that. If, on the other hand, I sign a contract that says I promise not to do that, that's a binding agreement. It's not a copyright issue, it's just a contract. And that's the world we're living in. Outside of the United States, the question of the activity I just described, there are some countries where you would need a license under copyright, and others where it's up for debate, depending on what the scope of that private study and research exemption is. But as we know, lots of librarians are being asked to sign, as a condition of access to databases, a no text mining contract, and we won't permit our users, in exchange for getting access to your database, we won't let our users text mine. Well, that's a contract, and that's still a binding agreement. And so if that's what you do, that's what you've done. Now, speaking of contracts, another issue that a lot of you have to deal with is dealing with authors and getting rights from the author. And there's this little mismatch between copyright and science that's worth knowing about. Now that you can see the world through the copyright glasses, you know that the author, from copyright's perspective, is the person who chooses to do the expressing, the person who does the writing, who makes the figure. So New England Journal of Medicine publishes a group of clinical studies that has 976 authors on it, right? That works for science, but from a copyright perspective, if you want the copyright to that article, you have to pick from that group the people who actually wrote it, and they have to formally sign a document for you to get the rights. If you don't do that, you've got a non-exclusive license, you're not infringing to publish, but the author, whoever wrote it, actually kept the copyright. And that's a sort of standard permission. You all know about open access. Let me just, my quick argument about open access is that these are the audiences that open access serves. So even if people have paid access to articles, guess what? Researchers still use Google, right? And there are articles they will find when they're out surfing on the open web. They won't think to go sign into their proprietary database to do their research. And so there are serendipitous connections to research that happen when everything's up on the open web and you can find it through links from a blog or other kinds of things. And then, of course, there are plenty of people who can't afford access to everything. Even Robert Darnton, the librarian at Harvard, has said the richest university in the country can't afford access to the full scientific record. And of course, interdisciplinary readers, international readers, and the machine readers that I started out with. Creative Commons, you'll hear a little bit about that. Basically, it's a set of permissions that, so if you take that set of copyrighted rights and now the activity needs a license, what Creative Commons tried to do is say, here are a couple of standardized buckets of permissions that we're gonna give to the world. An author can choose this. So these are the switches that the author can choose to flip on or flip off. Everybody gets attribution, and then the other three can be combined. You get six permutations. So the most open is CC BY. Just give me credit. Do anything else you want with it. That's what this presentation's under. You can resell these slides. Good luck to you, but you have the legal permission to do that. By share alike, you have to share any content that you pull out of this. So that's Wikipedia's license. If you have authors who want to put their figures in Wikimedia, Wikimedia will only accept content that's under the top two licenses. Everything else is considered too restrictive for them and therefore can't be. So if you're doing an open access journal and thinking about the copyright license to attach to it, if you go more restrictive than those top two, your content cannot automatically be uploaded. You can also give up your copyright and dedicate it to the public domain. That's the one on the left, CC0. That's being used in a lot of databases. So Dryad, for example, requires. And what that does is it just scrapes off if there's a little layer of copyright because maybe there's a little bit of choice about what the field names in an Excel spreadsheet were. So maybe copyright attaches it to that little layer. CC0 scrapes that layer off so it's clear that you can copy and reuse all the data. And the one on the right is just a label. It's not a license. It just says, this thing does not have a copyright attached to it anywhere in the world, and here's a stamp to let you know that.
Thank you.